You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
You can fucking see my mood. There's a little dark animal. Let's even fucking see what you're doing. What do you do? What do you do? That motherfucker goes to the dog, an animal, is he a little motherfucker? I can saw it, hey, the fucker, is he here, what? You're dead, the fucker, the
fucker. Awesome, so, this is a Go Plug Yourself, we've been calling them mini-sodes, because I like to make up words for things.
Good.
Because that's not a word, mini-sodes. We're joined by Shane, your last name?
Adam Zach.
Who is it's a one-man show, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that is correct.
One-man show, Zach Adams.
A complete history of Zach Adams.
Nice. And we're also joined by Elizabeth Blue, also known as Simply Blue, who is doing... Oh, man, something with the shaman.
Almost, dude, so close.
Oh, fuck.
1 week with
one
the
week
shaman.
1 week with the shaman. There we go. I was like, shit. And also... We're joined by my co-host on 90S, but today he's going to be on Go Plug Yourself.
That's
on.
Right.
Hey. Hi. Yeah, so we're here talking about Fringe. This is our ongoing series on Fringe, so that's why Zach and Blue are here. You guys are both also from out of town. Different parts of town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've traveled all the here from the west coast of Australia.
Nice.
I'd like to find out which of the company that traveled the furthest to be here.
Can you get farther away from here than the west coast of Australia?
I think it's like someone told me that Perth, where I live, is like the exact opposite point on the globe from Montreal.
Right.
So there you go.
So
you
exactly
challenge anyone
you
out
win.
There.
Well, it's pretty much going to be you and John, I think, right?
So yeah, well, he's traveled from Melbourne, which is on the east of Australia.
But closer.
But it's slightly closer
sure.
than the west coast.
I think you win the prize.
Yes. There should be a prize.
There should definitely be a prize. I came here the furthest, and Blue's from Brooklyn.
Yep.
But also Tennessee.
Yes.
But also Tennessee.
From Brooklyn, before that, from Tennessee.
Okay, so you're born in Tennessee. So that's why there's no New York accent.
Yeah, that's why I don't have that hard side that you expect.
From Brooklyn?
From New York City. People are like, you live in New York?
I guess also just want to get your mic just a little closer, sorry. That's cool.
Test.
Nice. All right. So, you guys, this boasts your second Montreal Fringe?
This is my third Montreal.
Okay.
I was here in 2008 with my company, Weeping Spoon. We were doing a show called Greed
at
the Just for Laughs studio. And I was here last year for the first time solo with a show called Love Songs for Future Girl.
Awesome. And you did Am I Blue last
Yes.
Year.
Yeah, I did my show Am I Blue here. And I had so much fun, I was like, I'm going to write a new show just so I can come back to the Montreal Fringe Festival.
Amazing. I don't know about both of you guys, but I know you're doing three Canadian Fringes, right?
Yeah, I'm doing, this one and then Winnipeg and Edmonton.
Okay, so you're just like, I'm from Tennessee and I love Canada. Is that...
Well, you know, it's like living in New York...
makes you love Canada?
New York is really exhausting, and so to have the chance to just perform for a couple months and really just have that opportunity to go and perform.
You're not allowed to just perform in New York?
Oh, you're allowed to do whatever you want, but it's really hard. I mean, you have to have other work unless you're at a certain level of commercial acting or something, and so...
And I guess it's the same in Perth, right? It's so competitive that you have to travel literally to the other side of the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a fringe scene in Australia as well, but it's different to here. Like, it's not all back-to-back. Like, it's quite spread out throughout the year, so there's not so much a fringe circuit you can do. It's
okay.
Sort of split into three different points of the year.
Okay.
So, because, you know, it's not like here where you guys have to wait till there's, like, the three-month gap of no bad weather and in summer and you just cram in as much as you can.
3 months is generous.
Which is awesome. I think it's great. But Australia, so we sort of spread it out a little bit more.
Yeah, it's like Montreal is, like, for festivals, it's ridiculous because they're all in that three-month gap, right? Like, there's, like the Grand Prix comes, Fringe comes,
Jazz Fest.
Just for Laughs comes, Jazz Fest comes, Frank, and it's all, like, in this, like, June, July, August.
Yeah.
And you're just completely... and burnt out, and then like September, like there could easily be snow in September. No, like maybe October. There could be snow, and then it's just like straight up hibernation until like the following year at some point. So it gets really intense in terms of like festivals. Like even the Fringe, like if you were here in 2008, I think in 2008 they were still having the like, because this year there aren't really any afternoon shows except really on Thursday and Fridays. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there used to be like just shows constantly, which was a little brutal on a lot of the artists because they're just sort of like, oh, when's your next show? 1 o'clock on Monday.
Yep.
Hope more than four people come. Yep.
Can everybody please quit their jobs so that I can come see our show?
Yeah, exactly. It was a little rough. So I think this year is like a little bit nicer, at least having most of the shows in the evening.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you guys want to talk about your shows, I sadly, full disclosure, have not seen either of them yet.
Yet
is the key word. I'm
two more chances or four more.
I've got four shows left.
I have two.
Okay, I'm planning on like going all out this weekend. That's my plan is to just like hit their like shows start at like noon on Saturday and just like tear through all the shows that I've really been meaning to see because I haven't been seeing nearly enough shows. So we'll start with, I guess we'll go with Zach. What your one man show? A little bit of, is it like storytelling and songwriting and or something?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mix. Last year I did a show which was mostly it was like a musical comedy cabaret show. This year's a little different. It's more of a play. It's a bit of storytelling, a bit of stand up, a couple of songs, a little bit of dance, even a little bit of dance. So it's a real sort of mashup of styles. But essentially, it's a comedy storytelling show about. The story about Zach Adams from when he was a little kid and he discovered he wanted to be a performer and his sort of his trials and tribulations on his sort of path to become a superstar and his sort of slow rise to mediocrity, which is the tagline of the show. Yeah.
Well, is it like, I mean, obviously it's a comedy. I mean, like, want to be superstar. But is it kind of depressing? Like, almost in a way? Because I find like that's a, I think anybody who's done anything, not anybody, I mean, obviously some people make it, but a lot of people who want to be superstars sort of like end up with mediocrity, you know, like is
yeah,
there any,
I mean,
any of that like flipping the lens and you're just sort of like, oh my god, this is a little like fun but sad, you
yeah
know?
I mean I'm not gonna ruin the ending or anything, but it's not a depressing show. It has a fairly optimistic ending.
He doesn't die at the end.
He doesn't die horribly in a fire surrounded by cats eating his face. You know, it's a show about, you know, someone striving for what they really want to achieve. Right. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. But I have had artists saying to me that they can relate to a lot of the stories where things don't go right and that it's a little bit too close to home. And I'm like, well, you know, the strange thing is when I originally wrote this show in about 2005, I've rewritten it for this year, but I originally performed it. And it was a very, very sort of fictitious work, theoreticizing about what this, you know, character's journey could be. And since then, I've strangely lived many of the events in the show, and it's become slightly more semi-autobiographical somehow. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's definitely a life imitating art, imitating life kind of thing.
Okay, that's life imitating life?
Life imitating life.
In art.
Perhaps you have the gift of prophecy.
Yeah, I could have some powers.
Maybe you like you really should have like being like, and then he won the lottery.
Yeah,
or something like that. And, like,
and he was surrounded by chicks, and it was awesome.
Blue, your show is, I guess, is it fictitious? Like, or
no.
did you went and met a shaman?
Yeah, it's a true story. The whole thing. That's I was trying to find something to bring back, and I just writing a bunch of random right, and then it was like, oh crap, I think I need to share this story because it really had such a huge effect on the rest of my life.
Okay.
After that, so it's a storytelling show, which is also different. Last year it was I pretty much did a sketch comedy.
You had multiple characters and stuff, right?
It was really one character.
Okay.
It was a character of myself.
Okay.
Like a characterization of spoofing myself.
And then this one is more you?
This one is just me.
Okay.
With people. And a little bit of acting in it, too, of just in the scenes. But
so how did you come to a decision to, like, go see a shaman?
And what kind of shaman? This is fascinating.
Oh, well, I think it's very fascinating. yeah, that... that's part of the show, actually. Okay. It's not just about the week. It's about everything leading up to that week, which I've since changed the title to Unenlightened because I realized, okay, it's about more than that. But, I was just hit the wall of New York City and living in this tiny shoebox apartment in the middle of Times Square and just life not going the way I had thought it was supposed to go. Similar, I think, to some of the themes in Shane's show. I was like, yep. like after living in New York for several years, and I'm like, how seeing people 10 or 20 years my senior and their lives don't look that different than mine, and I'm like, how? I can't do this forever. Just like work, perform, and just still get by, and you know, host of other events.
So like, instead of having a breakdown, you went to go see a shaman.
Yeah, I kind of had a little breakdown, which led me
to go. You can have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I got the breakdown.
Have the breakdown and the shaman.
And the shaman, yeah. I was just, like, looking for answers, and sort of this paper trail leads me to going to visit this shaman whom my cousin had known.
Okay.
She had worked with him for, like, 10 years and always told me these, or she would sometimes share a few, like, of her experiences.
Okay.
And it always is like, wow, that sounds cool. And, you know, I just read Eat, Pray, Love. And so I'm like, yes, I'll go pray. And then I'll get to come back and eat. And then I get love, you know. That's like the whole plan.
Oh, so, spoiler alert.
Yeah, and now I'm in Montreal. And
yeah, nah, da, da, da.
Putting myself out there waiting for love. It's coming.
Yeah, so this is basically the pray portion. It's a Native American shaman. And the whole thing is I went in with certain expectations that it would be this kind of cool, you know, I would leave feeling like, aha, yes, I know my purpose and my direction. I know now my special gifts, and I will go do them.
And your totem animal.
Perhaps. Yeah. And
it's going to be a sweet eagle.
Yeah. But instead, I find out, like, everything about myself that I don't want to find out. Like, it's sort of like seeing your dark spaces. That's how I feel. Like, he sees... it's like I learned through the way going out there is not about being told how like special you are and all these great things you have to offer. It's about seeing what, you know, your junk is and dealing with that. I know it's as fun as it sounds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, so you heard it here first, folks. Go see a shaman and learn terrible things about yourself. Check out your junk.
It is. It's really. I mean, when I started doing that, and then that, then I, it really. It's about being able to sit in that discomfort of trying to grow and change, and how uncomfortable it really feels to see your faults.
And your show's a comedy.
It's really not. That's the thing. I think I started it with hoping it would be a comedy, and then it's like, you know, it's just a story.
It just got a little dark.
It really is kind of about, like, sitting in the sludge and, like, yeah, I know.
But
I think a lot of people, you know, can relate, because that's something, if you want to become the person you want to be, it's like you have to deal with those uncomfortable moments, and like it's like learning how to take responsibility for my life instead of thinking there was an answer outside of me. So just
if you, like, knowing what you know now about the visit to the shaman, like, would you have done it again? Like, would you have, like, if future you could go back in time and talk to past you, would you be like, yeah, go see the shaman, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be rough, but it's going to be amazing. Or would you, like, want to maybe avoid it?
Well, back then, I would have wanted to avoid it.
Okay.
I wouldn't have wanted to go.
But overall...
But now, it has made me to be a functional human being.
Wow. So, it's like, kind of that implies that you weren't before. before.
I wasn't. I wasn't. I mean, you know, several different. I was laying on the floor, and there was maybe should have been on some antidepressants or something. That's some friends.
Good times. Good times.
I had an experience where I was telling some friends about like my spiritual journey, and they were like, "Maybe you should just get on some antidepressants. Like, it's okay. They just need to rewire your brain." And I'm like, "You don't understand. I'm doing deep work here, life changing work." And so, yeah. Part of it is it really shook me up, so I kind of felt like raw for a while. But from that, it's like I was able to. I feel like now, like it's great.
All right, so there is a happy ending to the to the laying out your junk in the shaman, whatever.
Yeah, because then there's like freedom. Sort of. It's like coming back and none of. Nothing's hiding anymore from me about myself, like how I am in relationships or people. Now I know, like, oh, and you know, awareness. There's some freedom there, but it's uncomfortable.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not the easy way necessarily, but it's kind of been an exciting ride.
It sounds a lot of fun. Shane, do you think? Possible sequel, Zach Adams goes sees a shaman?
Could be. I don't know. I don't know how I'd go finding a shaman in Australia.
I know a shaman in Australia.
Oh, well, there you go. Boom. Let's link it up. Let's make it happen. I'm going to do it as a podcast series. It'll be great.
There you go. Just have the shaman on the podcast and go on a journey of self-exploration with your fictitious character.
Yeah.
And just don't tell the shaman.
And just go check out his junk. Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's funny from what you guys are saying, is that your shows seem to be kind of almost similar in terms of, like, what Blue was saying, and like, thematically, like, two different, I mean, for Blue, was really her, for you, it was like a fictionalization of stuff, but it's two, like, it seems to be they're both sort of, like, explorations of artists who are trying to, like, make it work, and
come to sense with their successes and failures, and
yeah, exactly, and just sort of, like different ways, is that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like sort of trying to find where people sit in the world and where they fit in and what their purpose is and where they're going and where they're coming from.
Cool. So did you guys know each other before this year's Fringe? You met like last year?
Yeah, we met last year. Here. Okay. Here, right?
Yeah, here in Montreal.
I'm not sure. I was like, here in Grumpy's? That's amazing.
Yeah, right. Grumpy's
right here where we're sitting right now. Okay, cool. No, because I was just sort of wondering. I was like, if you guys met this year or if you had, because when mentioned her, I was like, oh, I'll just put you guys both on the podcast together if you know each other and you're buddies and you're not doing anything.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing, like the sort of Fringe family you develop.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get sort of all just thrust into this festival for 2.5 weeks and you're all in close proximity, so you become really close with people, and then, you know, you disappear from them for a couple of months and you see them in the next festival, and then a year later, it all starts again.
And so I've heard it mentioned, I think, several times over years and years and years, like it's a lot like summer camp kind of thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, it feels,
because you're all living in each other's pockets, you know, and you see each other all the time.
Exactly. Especially when, like, I know there's a couple people who have, like, they'll have connections in Toronto and Vancouver or whatever else like that. So you end up half the time with these like troops that are like staying, say a Montreal troop is staying at a Toronto person's house when they're in Toronto.
Yep.
And then in Toronto comes here in the Montreal, and they're just like this weird, and they're just kind of like living with each other.
It's all very incestuous.
Like, yeah, exactly. And then everybody just, you know,
vanishes for 9 months.
Vanishes at the end of the summer, and you're like, wow, that was weird.
Yeah.
Like, I got like a brother and a sister for a little while, and, yeah. And then they disappeared. That was my other question, is what's it like touring Fringe, right? It's got to be different from touring a normal show, because like you said, there is the summer camp kind of like there's the summer camp vibe. Like, instead of just sort of like, if you were to come to Montreal and just say like do a run of 6 shows over the course of 2 weeks, you wouldn't have like 130 other shows, you know, around you. You wouldn't be like completely surrounded by the community. Like, have you guys ever done a regular show, like a regular tour, or do you only tour Fringe?
I mostly tour Fringe. I have done like independent seasons, not really overseas, but in Australia I have. But yeah, I mean, for me, I just really like the atmosphere of the Fringe and sort of the community
of it.
Well,
it seems
more fun. Yeah, it's a lot more fun.
Like, if you were doing a couple shows, you'd be like, well, I don't have a show tonight, so I guess I'm going to go see the sights or whatever, as opposed to in Fringe, you're like, I don't have a show tonight, so I'll go check out so-and-so's show and so-and-so's show. Worst case, might be a concert at the beer tent, 1 o'clock in the morning, we'll head out to the 13th hour, and
exactly.
Your days are pretty much booked.
Otherwise, it's just walking around doing a show and then just normal life. Who wants that?
No, not me.
have you ever done a non-Fringe tour, or are you always touring with Fringe?
The last year coming here was my first Fringe, my first tour.
Okay.
And, I mean, similarly to what the themes on my show that I write about are all about, trying to find, you know, like, my pocket in the world. And so it all sort of feeds into each other because the genre I really have, doing more than anything else is solo work. Everything.
There's a red light underneath.
So oh.
I was like, holy shit, what's that? But it's not your actual thing. Sorry.
That's just my alien baby sleeping.
Don't worry, it's just the alien babies that Blue has underneath her seat. Yeah. Everything is okay.
Yeah, all is well.
Can I just say, I just used my mute button then for the first time. I was really excited about it.
While you coughed?
Yep. So, I coughed.
So the listener will be completely unaware.
But now I've mentioned that I've done it, so it's completely irrelevant.
They'll be like,
really.
Man, what a pro. Yeah.
What did we miss?
Exactly. Like, was it a really bad cough? Like, did he need water? And we're like, you'll never know, listener.
Yeah. That's like the audio commentary to this very podcast.
Yeah, exactly. The audio commentary on a podcast would be amazing because it's just like you're listening to a podcast and then these other people just start like talking over it. While
this
like,
is great. This is the part where he mutes himself. People don't get to hear the commentary.
And then we can do the commentary on the commentary. You become like this weird like Inception.
Hyper
podcast.
Meta.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird. Like it's Inception cast. No, and the worst is recording here at the bar. We've had walk-ons kind of things where it's like people come by and we're like, oh, so-and-so. And then we're like, oh, like trying to find a mic. And like we've had like...
The very famous homeless people.
We've had some very famous Montreal homeless people who have showed up and like sang duets with the guests.
Brilliant.
Like completely unprepared or anything else like that. Just like, oh, here comes a famous Montreal homeless person named Hollywood. And like we're just singing with the guests and stuff. And you're just kind of like... It always sucks because you want as much as possible to like throw a mic in something's direction so that like it doesn't become unusable.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just sort of like I don't know if you guys met Steven Spinola. He's in the Aristotle or Socrates Party Animal. I can't remember the name of it exactly. It's like a Greek themed thing. I think it's on it.
Hippolytus? No.
Maybe. Like it's something.
I think we'd be professional and have guides or, like, access to the internet.
Here's the funniest part is that, like, I have not actually picked up a guide to the Fringe. I've just been doing it off my phone constantly. Yeah. But I was like, and every time I'm like, I'm just using data for no reason. The guides are literally everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, I'm like sitting there on my phone and like next to a paper guide right next to me. And I'm like, what am I? I could just look there. But yeah, it's, and he was here one time because he's a local guy. And he just kept like yelling from the corner. And I'm like, man, like what you're saying is funny, but nobody can hear you. So you just hear our reactions to it, and it's like, it's just sort of like, just sounds completely like disjointed, us talking to like a non-existent person.
You've got my hopes up now. I'm like really hoping some homeless people will come in.
I think it's a little early for them. Yeah. I think it's usually.
I'm kind of tempted to just go out into the street and try find someone and bring them back.
We need a homeless guy here. Stop.
We're doing a podcast.
Comedy time.
we're joking. Like if we hit like, I mean, this will be like episode 17 or 18, like if we hit 100, we're just going to have, instead of a regular guest, homeless people.
Oh, just do like a best of homeless.
Yeah, well, exactly. Just bring a bunch of homeless people in and like, buy them beers and see where it goes. But, so yeah, how are you guys liking Montreal? Is it, I mean, you guys have both been here before. Is it your favorite Fringe? You can tell the truth, but I'll judge you if it's not.
We definitely shouldn't say that Toronto is our favorite. I honestly, I love this Fringe. It's the best party Fringe I've ever been to, for sure.
Guys, he's tapping his nose to signify it's a lie.
Hang on, I just got to turn my mute button. I have a great time over here. I love the people. I love the place. I love Tam Tams. Yeah. Tam Tams is amazing.
someone listening to this on the bus in the future who's like going like, woo, like because you did a shout out to Tam
Tam. I don't even know what Tam Tam's is.
Okay, you're so close to it. Like Fringe is so super, super close
yeah,
to it.
Sunday we'll go. Let me try. This is the way I explain it with my sort of outsider you go to the park at the base of the mountain, and there's just a massive cloud of pot smoke, and below that cloud is a whole bunch of hippies playing the drums and just dancing, right? And then you walk a little further, and there's just all like carnies, and they're all like just doing tightrope walking, which is really cool.
Juggling.
And then if you go a little further,
that's where things get awesome.
That is my favorite part. Just all these dudes and some chicks as well, just with like swords and armor, just hitting the shit
like
out
foam,
of each other.
Foam swords, yeah.
Amazing. Part of this
it's
experience.
It's one of those things that
you gotta see it to believe.
Yeah, if you guys ever read Vice magazine, they talk about Montrealers don't think their city's like kind of weird or whatever else like that, and they were like, but then again, they just accept the weird like drum pot smoking carnival yeah. sword fighting hippie fest that happens every Sunday.
Yeah,
but like, and that's just like they're like you can go to Central Park and there's nothing that's that weird. Like no. Central Park's a lot of fun and there's like the baseball diamonds and whatever else. I like Central Park, but it's like literally giant statue with like a pit of like 40 tam tam drums that are jamming for like 10 hours, and because they come and go.
People openly smoking pot.
Given
New York stop and frisk laws, yeah. I don't think you're likely to get away
exactly,
with it.
Exactly, like complete open use of marijuana and just like people just drinking beers up on the mountain. Then like there's the weird carnival stuff that like seems to make no sense. They tie up tight ropes connecting trees and then just like practice their tightrope walking and then like learn how to do handstands.
They had a zombie attack there one time too. It was a herd of people dressed up as zombies
attacking
came
the sword
out
fighters.
Of the woods and attacking the sword fighters. Oh. And the sword fighter guys were like, form a line! Got right into it.
I was asking someone like, because obviously, you know, it gets to the point where it's going to snow and stuff here, so I guess there's no tam-tams during that.
Yeah, but there's always kind of a, when does it start?
Yeah, is there like just...
it's not organized, you know? Like there isn't.
Yeah, there's nobody in charge.
Or is it just like, it's the first sunny Sunday and they just know that it's supposed to happen?
Sort of. Like, I know that they, a lot, if it's nights, they obviously aim for 420. To be like a Tams kind of kickoff. I know that's what they tried to do this year because 420 was on a Friday, so like 422, they tried to have like a Tams. But I mean,
a little cold.
It's a little brisk, yeah. but usually basically like it's sunny on a Sunday and it happens.
It's on.
Yeah, like a friend of mine actually, when he was studying his bachelor's in philosophy, lived like a block or two away from there and like didn't know anybody in the foam sword combat business, but was like, this looks like the best stress relief I could imagine, and like learned how to make his own little foam sword or whatever. Right. And then like Sundays he was like going up to the mountain and I'm gonna foam sword fight for a few hours and come back covered in dirt and like and he's like, and then I'm gonna go back to my philosophy studies.
Yeah,
you know?
Wow. Awesome.
I'm gonna get a sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should do it. We were there last weekend and there was just, after it all sort of dissipated, there was just a shield left. And we were tempted to take it, but we felt weird about it. But it's just a shield.
Yeah, they may come back for the
left
shield.
Over after combat.
Yeah, and they'll be they're a little standoffish, but not in a mean way. More of in a like a self preservation way, because like there are going to be some people who are like, "What are you nerds doing?" You know, and like whatever else. So they have kind of a little bit of a. Like a social barrier up, but like if you're friendly and nice to them, like someone will definitely lend you a sword and like explain how it works.
Do you know if the dude is still
King
there?
Dude? Yeah, for sure.
He's still like the leader
the
of the
King
them.
Dude.
So you're gonna see a guy there who's half Asian, has like long black hair.
There's a lot of it's getting gray. It's getting crazy.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's got like a big black beard with a little bit of gray shooting from it. He's a little bit on the heavy side, but not super.
Chances are he'll be in full costume.
Oh yeah.
Like black
medieval
armor
tabard
and
whatever.
Yeah.
All this stuff. If you go up to him and say, "Hey, dude, John sent me."
John sent me.
John
that's
from
what I
sci-fi,
say.
Possibly.
Right. How many? You may know a few Johns.
Yeah, John from sci-fi.
John from sci-fi.
That's what it means.
And he'll be like, "Here's your sword."
Almost, yeah.
Join us in battle.
Yeah. Join us in sacred combat. What?
Yeah.
Apparently, he was the like. There's this like. I feel bad. We talked about this on a podcast like 2 weeks ago, but I'm gonna say it again because it's so awesome, and you guys don't know. There's like an amazing picture of him from the zombie invasion because all the zombies played up getting hit a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like as soon as they hit with the sword, they go like fly backwards. And it's him doing this like big, like 360 wheeling sword swipe and like five zombies just like flying away. Like, and it was just like not staged or anything. It was just the zombies attacked him, and he did like a big sweep, and the zombies like flew away, and there's like motion blur on it and everything. And you're like, that is the probably
what
the
what an amazing moment for those guys that day, where they've been practicing for years, and finally a real attack. Yeah. And like,
here
this is it.
No, exactly. Apparently,
this is our final hour.
Apparently, that's it. Apparently, they broke through the woods or whatever, and it was like, dude, who was just sort of like, form a line, and just sort of like, watch the flank, and like whatever else, and just started like yelling.
They're still protecting the flag.
Yeah, exactly. Just like yelling orders or whatever else like that, and it was like. Like I said, I had friends on both sides of it. I knew a bit of some of the sword fighters. I knew some of the people that were the zombies. And, like, the sword fighters, like, loved it, obviously, because they're like, that's amazing, you know? Yeah. It's just sort of like, how much greater could your Sunday get? You're like, I'm going to go up to the mountain and do some sword fighting. That's going to be fun anyway. Unknown to you, zombies will invade.
Fantastic.
That's amazing that exists.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's going back to your question about Montreal. That's like, a reason why Montreal is so great. It just seems like everyone gets to just do their thing.
Yeah.
You just do your thing.
That summarizes Thames a lot.
Yeah,
it's just
very much.
People doing their thing. Like you just head up there and just do whatever. Like if you even some people do not quite like Hyde Park because there's not as much of it, but some people would just sort of like stand up on a thing and do a spoken word and like whatever else, and some people like sell their wares, like homemade jewelry and stuff, kind of just like on blankets and on the mountain. It's like it's a pretty sweet vibe overall. And yeah, it's on Park Avenue, so like you know,
smack downtown.
If you know where the well.
Oh, it's on Park Avenue.
Yeah.
Huh.
Like so, if you
staying on Park.
Yeah, if you go. Basically, if you just walk east from the beer tent, you'll hit it.
Yeah, it's just the bottom of the mountain, right?
Yeah, it's just the bottom of the mountain, like that big statue.
Yeah.
That big statue will be surrounded by all the drums, and then like the rest of it sort of like spreads out.
You can't miss it.
Yeah.
No, if you've been here already and not been there, you're like you're missing out. Like it's on a big to-do list.
I'm not missing out anymore.
No more. Every
We're fixing
Sunday
this now.
That you spend in Montreal in the
Sunday.
Summer
yeah.
will be a 10.
Okay,
we'll
Sunday.
Make it a real Montreal thing. We'll get some poutine, take it up there. We'll talk French to each other.
Yeah.
Get baked.
It'll be great.
Can you guys talk French to each other now? Just give it your best? Give it your go?
No.
I learned this last night.
Go.
Bonne nuit, mon ami.
Ah,
why are you laughing? That was okay, right?
It's good. It's
that
good.
Was
it rhymes. It's like it's an introduction to French poetry, even.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I love Montreal. I might move here. If it didn't get so cold, I would live here.
One thing I will say as a Montreal is that, like, the cold, A, makes the summer, like, better sort of thing, like, where it's sort of like... In Australia, if you're like, kind of nice weather all the time, and you're like, whatever, you're not going to go out.
Yeah, the summer's not really a treat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas, it's like, summertime hits in Montreal, and you're like, I'm going to be on a, like, at the very least, on a terrace for, like, 4 out of 7 nights. Probably going to be at shows, probably going to be doing this, probably going to be doing whatever. And you're just sort of like, you make your summer, like, really count.
Yeah.
And also, like, something kind of cool happens because like Montrealers sort of have that like we're all in it together when like the winter comes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sort of like you hear stories of like people who move here and they're like they get snowed in and they're just sort of like complete strangers help you get your car out of the snow like on a regular basis, and a lot of people sort of like they hibernate but like hibernate together, so there's gonna be a lot of like movie nights, you know, and like come over to my place, we'll all watch a movie, and you know, like,
cool.
Gets a little...
It's cold outside, but if you want to avoid the outside, that is totally possible.
We also built
right?
an underground city.
Yeah, we have an underground city, of, like, a whole stretch of malls that are all connected to each other and to metro stations, and, like, unless you, like, go out of your way to hang out outside in the freezing cold...
That's the big drawback of the plateau, really, is that it doesn't connect properly to the metro stations, and it doesn't connect at all to the underground city. Like, it's sort of a big...
You had me at Underground City.
I know. I'm like,
you're like, where is it?
The little
Take
land.
Us
There's
there
so many
now.
Secret little lands here.
It's called the. I think the official name of it is the Réseau, which is also spelled wrong, like R-E-S-O. And you can even like look up maps of it, and it's like tons of office buildings around here and tons of malls around here.
All connected by
like tunnels. Like you can go into the tunnel, like around say, like, Peel, if you know the area a little bit, and, like, walk all the way to Place des Arts without ever coming up. And that's, like, 4 or 5 metro stops kind of thing. Like,
wow.
Just, like, meandering through these different, like, malls and office buildings and whatever without ever going outside. A lot of office buildings are connected on the Orange Line. So, like, I used to work at Place Bonaventure, and you would just, like, I would maybe, I'd ride the bus for 10 minutes, get on the metro, and then for the rest of my day not need a jacket. Like, even if it was minus 40, you know?
Yeah,
like,
brilliant.
Like, other than the waiting for the bus that one initial time in the morning, I wouldn't need a jacket until the end.
Give me the one, like, essential piece of clothing you should get to survive a Montreal winter.
A scarf. I would even say...
What are you kidding me? You're not going to say a jacket. It sucks as an answer, but it's the... Like, you can't get by with a scarf and no jacket.
I do all the time, dude. Thank you. Like,
what?
Like, until, like, well into December, I just wear a blazer and a scarf, right?
Okay.
I'm just saying, I'll take the scarf. Not to say scarf over the jacket. When it gets, like,
-40 degrees, you're going to go without a jacket.
Right.
But it's just kind of, like, I find it... I didn't say a good jacket. Say a good jacket. Because you know when you, like, those girls wear those jackets that, like, end right there and stuff? And when they move, it, like, shows, like, skin and stuff. And you're like, that is not a winter jacket. Like, that jacket is useless. You know, like, you'd rather have, like, a scarf.
I don't understand the thing with scarves, man. It's like a shitty person is choking you all day. This guy, he's
some people
seriously
are, some
wearing
people
them
are into that,
a year.
You know?
No, that's true.
No, because you know, in acupuncture, Chinese medicine, they say, like, colds enter through your throat and through, like, the back of your head. So it's very important to keep your neck covered in the cold.
She's right. I've been saying this for fucking years. She went to go see a shaman. She knows.
He said, wear scarves.
Yeah, I have a, like, in the least bad way to take this, I have, like, a really sensitive throat. And I get sore throats like nobody's business in the summer. That's why I went to scarf in the winter. Even in the summer, like, air conditioning on too high, I get, like, the crazy sore throats.
So let me get this straight. You have sore throats all the time, and you wear a scarf, and you're claiming that the
no,
scarf
I'm saying when I don't.
In this situation.
When I don't. Like, when I go to Jaime's or whatever, and he has his air conditioning cranked at, like, a million, I get a sore throat just right away, and it's, like, super shitty.
So what about... I get sick like a normal person every now and again. I never, ever wear a scarf, and I never have sore throats other than the...
We should ask Ross. Ross wears scarves more than even I do.
What if it's this conspiracy? It's all people with sore throats all wearing scarves.
Well, that is the one thing that I will say as a... I wear scarves almost, like, 24/7 in the winter, like, indoors, outdoors, whatever else, and... Something that I think a lot of people don't do is wash their scarves enough. Because it's just sort of like, if you're coughing and shit, like, you're going to get some cold.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you're going to get some of your cold germs up in your scarf. And then you're like, and then I'm going to wrap it around my face again. And you're like, no, that's not a good idea.
Let's recycle that old cold from last month. let's get some of that back in my body.
It is good and mutated by now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's super cold.
It's whatever the cold is left on the scarf has survived the last month, like, clinging to fibers, whatever. And it doesn't seem like a normal item to, let's say, you should wash your clothes. But, like, people don't, I think, wash scarves the way they'd wash a shirt. And I'm like, you should.
So if you get anything from this podcast, get... Go to our shows and wash your scarves.
Yeah. That's going to be the subtext to this episode. It's going to be like Elizabeth Blue and Shane
Adam Zach.
It's so complicated because your last name
is
Adam.
Three names.
But it's Adam Zach.
Shane Adam Zach.
But the character is Zach Adams.
That's why it's easy to remember Adam Zach.
Oh, I wanted to ask you something. Is your email address like any kind of nod to the Terrible Children show? Because it seems like it.
I don't even know what that is.
Okay, there's a show called The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
Oh, that's like a Nickelodeon show,
right? Yeah, but like kids who somehow magically like live in a hotel. And when I was like, wait a second, Cody and then Zach Adams and then Adam Zach, and then I was like, that's...
I wish it did.
You could change that. You could answer.
Sadly,
you could just answer me and be like, "Yep, it's an homage to
it does." Let's edit this out. It's my favorite, Nickelodeon show ever. I just love the way they just have that sweet, sweet life in that hotel. Last year, myself and Chris Wilson from the Peter and Chris duo from Vancouver.
That's another show you guys, everybody should check out.
You should definitely check that out. Yeah. We started a TwitCom.
Okay.
Which is it's a Twitter sitcom, so every episode only is 140 characters or less,
That's
right?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So we did a whole series of them, and it was called The Sweet Life of Zach and Chris.
Okay.
And basically every episode would just be like two lines of dialogue because that's all the room we had. All
right.
So if you actually search the hashtag on Twitter, Sweet Life of Zach and Chris.
Okay.
You can find our Twitcom.
That sounds to me like the like written version of 5 second films.
Have you seen 5 second films?
Five second films.
Yeah.
Exactly what it sounds like.
It's a website. Do they do daily now?
Something like that.
They either do daily or like three a week pro star. Where it's just like 5 second films that often in those 5 seconds have like exposition, conflict resolution, like bang bang bang,
denouement.
Like denouement sometimes. Yeah. Sort of like my favorite one is an episode called Meeps, where it's just like this guy like strolling in his house, and then you see like kind of like a little like fuzzy ball outside of his window, and he's like Meeps, and then suddenly like thousands of them just like start flooding him, and he's like and gets like taken down, and it's like over, like the end.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just nice. Sort of, like it's they're all kind of like there is storytelling ish. You know, but like really cut down to
very, very concise.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Go to like, what is Cinco de Mayo?
Shut the fuck up.
And then it's all drunk at the end. It's just like, it's good. Yeah. If you're sitting around in an internet cafe or something on your journeys and you want to like kill like 5 minutes, you can watch like giant, the units, like the player, you just keep clicking. There, it's a great time waster. If you're just
yeah, that'd be like 1,000 5 second. Or something. That takes advanced math.
John, do the math.
100?
Yeah.
It'd be 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be at least 4,000.
Yeah, at least 4,000 5 seconds.
You could watch.
Yeah, in 5 minutes.
But yeah, no, it's a great time waster because when you're just sort of like, I'd like to be entertained, but I only have a few minutes. You're like, I can get so entertained in those few minutes by like multiple little stories. The whole little film crew is, I think they have like 4 minutes.
My bad, it was 60.
Huh?
It was 60. I'm sorry.
What? I mean, it was 60.
You can watch 60 in 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, right. Okay, that makes more sense.
No, I think
yeah.
It's more like
okay.
4,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
I think
4,000.
I'm not a scientist, but I'm pretty sure.
I'm no mathematician.
I think we're coming to a group consensus that it's 4,000.
Right? Yeah, 4,000 in 5 minutes.
3 against 1. I feel like I could maybe
like democratically speaking, I'm wrong.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that, kids, is how the government works. That was it. That was a perfect
exactly.
example.
We all decided that you can watch 4,000 5 second films in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Doesn't matter about the facts.
The end. Do you guys, I don't want to like, if you don't know anything about it, but you just mentioned the government works, are you guys, have you been like privy to any of the student protests or whatever? Or?
I know a little bit about it.
Because a lot of the Montreal Fringers are like, at least in support.
Yeah, I know. I know that's what the little red square means, that you're a pro.
Yeah, which I find is like, it's good because it's a symbol and everybody like rallies behind symbols and whatever else like that. But I find that it's sort of useless in a way because when you guys come into town, where you should be possibly like getting support to like help the cause, whatever, you'd be like, wow, these guys really like red squares.
I when I first arrived, I just saw all these people with red squares. Is that a fashion thing? Like, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Canadian thing that is really like red felt, but just like a really small square of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it looks kind of cool.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I don't really, all I know is from, I started seeing all this stuff on my Facebook feed from all my Canadian friends, and then slowly all of their profile pictures would just be red squares,
yeah.
And they would seem a lot angry a lot about what was happening, and write a lot of things in French, so, yeah, so
French,
I'm not
French,
quite...
French, boy, that person's upset.
Wow.
And likes
yeah.
the color red.
There's some capital letters in there, and
yeah,
exclamation
a lot of caps.
Points, and... Some politicians' names.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, so I was just kind of wondering because they, like I said, I've seen a lot of red squares around, and I was seeing if anyone had been like approached you or anything. And... No.
Are
no.
you on the red side?
I'm very neutral in this. Like, one of the other co-hosts of the podcast, Scott, is very like. I'm surprised he doesn't have a square. He really should. The amount that he argues about it.
Yep.
I feel like he should. It's a complicated issue. It's very complicated, so we won't really get into it. I just wanted to know if you guys had an opinion. But if you don't, we're not gonna make this a red square podcast.
My only comment is I think your squares look very nice, Montreal.
It's kind of cute. Like not
that's great, buddy.
I hope that's not trivializing the issue at all. Yeah. But I think y'all look real cute.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what I like, I thought it, when I first started seeing it on Facebook, I thought it might have something to do with Occupy Wall Street. which
it spread out a lot of the because there was an Occupy Montreal around Christmas time, and like a lot of the early signs from when the tuition thing came on had like Occupy Montreal kind of like it was a little bit of carryover because there was only a couple months in between the two. Like the protest started when I think they started March.
Something like that. It's been months.
Yeah. The protesting started like March, which was only like 2 months after Occupy Montreal had ended. So it like was a lot of the same, like a lot of the same vibe kind of flowing into it, and like the whole Occupy. Like I saw some tweets and stuff related to the student protest that had still the old Occupy hashtags kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, because in New York that was really big for a while, and then it's sort of. It seemed to kind of collapse on itself, and now what's sort of left is kind of a ragtag bunch hanging out at Union Square, and they've kind of got some, homeless folks there, and so it's sort of lost. It seems to me, I don't know anything really. I didn't go to any of the protests, but it seems like it sort of has lost its speed a bit. So to see that in Montreal, all these protests are going on, and all these people are really, like, passionate about changing things. I think that's really exciting.
Well, the tuition thing, I think, gave, because, like I said, it was a lot of crossovers in terms of who was protesting. I think the tuition sort of gave gave more of a focus, because the Occupy movement was like, we want a lot of change.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, it's almost like too broad of a spectrum that could be, like, handled in a single protest. And it was like, obviously it was a great demonstration of people being upset and wanting change, but it didn't have like an agenda, and like there were some people who would be part of the Occupy movement who were like completely down with the government, and then there'd be some people who would be like, no, we just want some changes on how the banks work, you know, like they're kind of, it would cover the whole gamut. But like here in Montreal, when it sort of like it all hit a single focal point of they're jacking tuition fees immediately after the most recent increase. And, like, Montreal, like, well, Quebec, way back in the 70s, there was actually, like...
We're really doing this, buddy. Going all the way into this.
Way back in the 70s.
So much information.
Way back in the 70s.
These nice people just want to talk about their shows, and they're going to fucking talk about this protest thing.
Fine. Do you guys want to know? Do you want to know? Or we can move on. It's okay.
I'm cool. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
All right. Then we're doing
it. Way back in the 70s, there was actually, like, a vague political promise of free education completely, like a free university system. Like actual politicians were like, we're going to increase, they put a, was it 20, 25 year?
Cap or freeze.
They put like a 25 year freeze on tuition. Like tuition didn't go up from like the 70s, early 70s to the like, or like maybe
late 90s. It was a long.
Like mid 90s or whatever. Yeah. Like it was like a 20 to 25 year complete tuition freeze. It was $500 a year that people were paying for tuition. And part of the freeze included like a sort of promise of like that at the end of the 25 years it might just be free, you know. So, but instead it's gone up from $500 in the early 90s to going to be, I think, the second most expensive in Canada, right? I think at the end of this 5 year.
I don't know what the exact numbers are, but they're increasing at a fairly significant proportion.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the big argument, the argument for the tuition hikes is that we're still going to be significantly cheaper than a lot of places worldwide. We're still going to be cheaper than a lot of places in Canada. And the argument against it is like, hey, that's the complete opposite of that time you said it was going to be free.
Yeah.
You know? that's not just another good argument against it is that the proportions of the distribution of that money are not handled very well in Quebec. So the directors and the board of directors for the people supporting McGill and Concordia are some of the highest paid in their field. And then at the same time, so they want to make this huge tuition hike that isn't going to go to the students. It's going to go to pay the people who are organizing the university, which just doesn't really make all that much sense.
There's a
lot of people are going to say, like, oh, well, what the fuck? You're complaining about an extra couple hundred dollars a semester. And that's fine. That's legitimate. But there's a ton of countries in Europe where university is free, and it's totally affordable and makes perfect sense for those countries. And why isn't that happening in the U.S. and Canada? Why don't we treasure the education of our kids in the same way?
One of the biggest, at least, it's not even like pro or anti. One of the interesting arguments that I heard about was this like group of people who, in order to like set aside, like I guess it's almost pro the protesters, I suppose, in order to like prevent tuition fees, is that they were saying that it, to maybe put like a, like say like a 5 to 10 year like work cap on people, saying that like, because like McGill is a world-renowned hospital, but if you get a McGill medical degree,
you're probably not going to work in Canada because you can make six figures working in the States. Whereas in Canada, you'll make like 60 or whatever. Like whatever the heck the salary is.
I don't think it's that low.
No, it's way high. But it's not going to be, well, like high six figures in the States if you go into private practice.
Sure.
Versus like maybe
below six figures.
Below six figures in Canada, where they were just sort of like, which in my opinion isn't like a terrible idea. Like I'm like, if you're going to get cheap education in Canada as a Canadian, you should maybe stay in the place where it got you, at least for some period of time. And I thought that was kind of an interesting approach to the whole thing. Possibly, I don't know if they'd be down for it. Because, I mean, like, even lawyers, I think, was the biggest one. The amount of people that graduate with law degrees and then, like, screw off to other parts of the world to become big-shot lawyers. And you're like, that kind of sucks. Like, taxpayers paid for their tuition. And it's kind of like, and even doctors, like, I haven't had a general practitioner in ever, basically, like, except for when I was a little kid. Like, doctors are hard to come by in Montreal. Like, having your own...
Unless you want to pay for it.
Unless you want to pay for it. Like, unless it's like a privatized doctor. So it's kind of like, but if everybody graduating from McGill Medicine had to at least stick around for a bit and, like, give back a little bit to Montreal, I think that'd be kind of nice.
You could never enforce making them stick around. Oh, yeah, but I guess
absolutely
you could,
dude.
No, you can't.
Definitely could.
You're going to, like, stop them at the airport. No, sir, you're not allowed to leave. Go back to the hospital and work.
It'd be super, super easy.
No, what you would do is you would charge them the difference. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You'd charge them the time.
That's what I'm saying. Is that you'd either, like, charge some penalty or whatever. I'm not saying you could, like, force them to stay in the country, but like, there's mechanisms that you could, like, charge them some sort of a penalty. You could, like, force them to pay taxes on their income if they left.
So, again, I'm a little terrified at this podcast. We're supposed to be talking about friendly shows.
Oh, we're gonna wrap it up and go back to the shows politics. And Fringe and how great that is. Oh, these guys are getting getting a bit of a taste.
We're getting an education and
it's edutainment.
It's edutainment. Well, now I'm a little more informed and I more than just thinking that your red squares
are delightfully
cute. You have my support.
There you go.
All right,
Shane, give us his full support.
Here, here.
Blue also. All right.
Yeah.
You guys can go to any store, buy some red felt.
Some red felt. And
that is the one thing that is pro the red felt squares. It's like super easy to come by.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sort of like cut up a square, done. Just, I guess.
Works. I don't know. Red doesn't look so good on me though. Like, can I have a?
You got a little red heart on you right now.
Oh, that's true. I could rock maybe a green square.
That's another thing.
Is what?
Is it?
Green squares?
I'm not even kidding. There's been like some...
No, let's forget it. I don't want to
No, it's like some hardcore like sovereignists have like commandeered part of it and they wear green squares. Like they've made they made it a sovereignty thing. And you're like,
that's complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Don't stick with either do the red or don't throw in other colors. It might mean something else.
It's like, oh man.
I was talking with a guy who runs a piercing shop called Mauve in Montreal. And he said that back in the 80s, and possibly still to this day, there was a code for fetishes related to, like, handkerchiefs kind of thing. And there was, like, various colors meant you were into various things because when you go to a fetish club, it's, like, a big blanket of, like, fetish club. But not everybody who's going to be going to a fetish club is going to necessarily...
Have your specific fetish.
So there's, like, this whole color-coded... handkerchief thing, and apparently like Mauve, like purple, is into like piercing and bondage or whatever else like that. So hence why his piercing shop is called Mauve. But yeah, the red square thing is kind of like that. Like you could maybe if you put the wrong square.
Boom. So you're taking a risk if you're putting on a random color.
Exactly.
Square.
You might if you put on a
dude,
random.
That means you're a neo-Nazi.
Oh shit!
Take it off.
Take it off. Just stick with the red one, dude. Just go with the red. So despite possibly the incredibly strong urge that you would have to wear a blue square.
Da da da.
Hey,
you gotta be careful because that's the one where you're into being peed on. So. Oh.
Well, in that case, where's the blue square?
Hey, hello. You heard it here first.
Sign me up with the blue square. All right, so we're just about hit the hour. We're gonna wrap it up. We want to talk just a little bit more about your shows. You have four left. You have two left. This is going to go up tomorrow, so you might only have three left by then.
That
right?
is true.
Yeah, so we need to pretend we're in the future.
So for the listeners...
How good is it on Friday today, which it is right now?
Exactly.
Being Friday.
It's sunny and gorgeous.
And you have just enough time to hop over to the Berry Street Theater to get to my 3:45 show.
Nice, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, it's going to go up tomorrow morning, so that is a true thing.
At 4001 Berry.
Awesome. And then you have your next one?
At 10 o'clock on Saturday.
10 o'clock at night?
10 o'clock at night, okay. Yes. No morning shows.
That was like an early morning show, that's rough. Yeah. And your show again is?
It's 1 week with the Shaman. And it's, yeah. Two more shows. You can find it on the Montreal website. It's got a picture of me in mountains.
Is the podcast will link the post will link to.
Oh, you guys have those internet.
We are on the internet.
Internet specialties.
Amazing. A complete history. Zach Adams. A complete history of Zach Adams. It's at Venue 4. It's just near the beer tent. So go grab a beer and come check out my show. I'll have three left at this time. I don't know what the times are at this point.
I'll post them.
There'll be links.
Yeah. ZachAdams.org. It's on there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You guys have anything else you want to say? Any shows that you want to check out other than your own? Or that you want to
I'll tell you a few shows that I've seen that I really liked. 1 week with the Shaman was amazing. Tinfoil Dinosaur, Peter and Chris. Callahan. Oh, Ukrainian dentist's daughter is amazing.
I'm running off to interview her like right now.
Yes. Yeah. So Yana's delightful. Cameron Moore's Power Play. Heaps of stuff. Just go see something. Oh, Tough. Kirsten's
I saw Tough
show.
Yesterday. It was awesome.
Yeah. Just go see everything.
Go see all.
Jim Rolls.
Oh yeah.
I saw him yesterday. His new shows. Really.
That's hilarious. He's a mainstay, sort of, right?
So. Yeah. He's a classic, and he's, it's really fun, really great. And then I was a part of this show yesterday called Body Slam.
Okay.
And it's it's like dance, poetry, music. They had storytelling, and it was just really beautiful. It's like a really nice, and they have air conditioning.
Yeah. I didn't want to ask about the venues because I didn't want to drive away any of the
Oh,
guys,
yeah. No, don't.
All of the venues at Fringe are nice and cool. You will not
have
be
fans.
You will not be uncomfortable in your chair. You won't break a sweat. There'll be frosty beverages. All the venues.
Also, Dad's Deaths.
Oh, yeah.
And the All-Star Improv Comedy Jam.
Which is fun, right? Like different show
really
every night.
Fun, yeah.
Different people, other Fringers just jumping on and doing stuff. That's great. Okay, cool. Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yep, so Elizabeth Blue, a.k.a. Blue, and Shane.
You can do it.
Adam Zach.
Boom.
Bam.
Da-da-da.
Two Fringos. I'm Keith.
I'm John.
And this was a Go Plug Yourself Fringe episode. Thanks for coming, guys.
Is there music? Are you putting music over this right now?
Yeah. Hey, if I can see a book, there's a little dark animal. Let's see if I can see a little dark animal. Let's see if I can see a little motherfucker. Let's see if I can see a little dog, an animal. Let's see if I can see a little motherfucker. I can see a little fucker. Let's see if I can see a little dog. I'm fucking with a little dog. I'm fucking with a little dog. I can't fucking see a little dog.
Yeah. 9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.